Good evening. I'm K2. It is that time. I'm K2, Romeo, India, Whiskey. My name is Dick. And along with Mel, K2, Kilo, Echo, Yankee, the two of us run a thing called the Technical Net for quite a few years now. Main purpose of the Technical Net is to get people's questions answered about this somewhat complicated hobby of ham radio. We gather the clan, and thank goodness there are experts out there that help us on most of the subject. And ham radio is going through a number of changes. For those of us who cut our teeth 2 decades ago in ham radio on FM repeaters, we used to have to buy crystals in order to have your rig work on a particular channel. Along came frequency synthesizers. And all of a sudden, one crystal gives you 800 possible channels. That was a bit of a breakthrough. Transistorized radios are a bit of a breakthrough. Nowadays, you hear a lot about SDR, software-defined radios, where you change the computer program and it changes the configuration of the radio, the way it behaves, and the kind of signals it'll demodulate. You could say now that your television set is a software-defined television. It is essentially a computer program that's doing an awful lot of the work to get you that television signal with 2, 3, 4, and even more chunks of program material all transmitted on one particular frequency channel. That's software-defined television. When it comes to your antenna tuner, we've discussed that quite a bit, and there's a lot of misunderstanding about how it works and how to make it work better. Antennas, antenna tuners, software-defined radios, digital protocols like weak signal Joe Taylor techniques that allow you to listen to very, very weak signals. It's continuously changing. It's evolving. And if you want to find out a little bit more about how to do it better, how to understand it, the TechNet attempts to answer those questions. A person signs into the Technical Net by giving Mel and Dick your call letters, your name, and the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment for the net. After 27 years it will be this coming September, we don't have to confirm that people are listening. You don't have to sign in to say, no question. If you've got
repeater, time out.
If you've got a question or comment, do sign in. You don't have to otherwise. We believe there are people out there after all these years. So give me your call letters and name and that yes at this time. K2LIW listening.
K2LIY.
Go.
Yes.
Joe recognized. Anyone else?
Okay. So good evening, then. This is K2KEY. The weather is keeping everybody out. Enjoying the fourth, extended fourth pick. Over.
Mel recognized. So far we got Joe and Mel. Anyone else? Boy, we got a lot of people celebrating this weekend. So give me your call letters if you want to sign into the TechNet. Give me your call letters and name at this time. K2RIW.
KC2FTU, the name is Mark. No traffic.
KC2UPP, Mike, no traffic.
Okay, we got Mark and Mike. Let's start off with Joe. Looks like it's going to be a late evening tonight, or at least in the beginning it will be, Joe. So you can take your own free time, and you can get two of your questions answered if you like. W-A-2-R-Y-Y. K-2-R-I-W in the TechNet.
Dick, can you add me to the list? KC2QIQ with a question?
Okay, you're number two on the runway.
KC2QIQ.
Some guy who runs by the alias of Glenn. All righty, we got him. You got it, Joe.
Oh, I thought it was one question per customer, but that's okay. I've been curious on how this technology works. It's probably been around for a while, and that is the technology of digital information being transmitted over an AM broadcast radio channel without altering the bandwidth, apparently. Do you know anything about that technique?
Not a heck of a lot. When it comes to stereo transmissions, I've got a little bit of understanding, but the digital techniques by which compatible high-fidelity audio over an AM broadcast channel operate simultaneously with ordinary AM. In other words, in the case of television, we had to abandon, so to speak, our old television receivers for the new digital television. To my knowledge, nothing like that has happened with AM broadcast radio, 0.5 to 1.5 megacycles, 500 to 1500 on your dial, so to speak. To my knowledge, everybody is still using the same car radio. Just some of them have this better equipment to get a digital signal, and apparently simultaneously, whether it's on the same channel or an adjacent channel, I don't know. I hope Eric knows, and I hope Eric is available. If he's not right now, hopefully he'll come in a little bit later. KE2EJ or anyone else who has knowledge of digital AM radio, give me a call with us right now. K2LIW. Temporarily, you may have stumped the crew that's here, Joe. And if by the time we sign out tonight, you don't get an answer, you get the prize. Mel's got this great big logger, ledger book in which he keeps records about all this. And so you and your lady friend will get a dinner in a fine restaurant when you ask us a question that we can't answer, when us and the other people find in can't answer it. One more time, anyone with any knowledge of digital AM radio, digital / stereo, give me a call letters right now.
KC2OJO.
KC2OJO. Start over your name and tell us anything you know on the subject, because I don't.
The name is Howard, and I am certainly not an expert on it, but I've done a little bit of reading, and the technique is, of course, called HD radio. I understand the HD does not stand for high definition. Nobody knows what it stands for. It's a private standard, and you can buy these radios at places like Radio Shack, for instance, for, they were originally about $200, come down to about $100 now. And the technique they use is they broadcast simultaneously with the AM. It turns out that the FCC has specs for how high your skirts can be adjacent to the next AM channel. And what these guys do is they send out enough digital data at a encoded, but they actually fill up the legal skirts so that they stay legal. They therefore theoretically aren't affecting the AM channel, and yet they're broadcasting a digital signal. I don't know exactly how it works, but I would imagine it's very similar to all the other digital techniques, where there's basically a carrier and then quite a few tones are being sent out at the same time, some sort of QAM. And evidently it works fairly well, but I do know that a lot of people have been disappointed. It's very much like digital television, that in the amplitude world, the old stuff works out to a much greater distance and has a greater range for a given power than the digital. Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, I could take a stab at it in case KEY got called away for a minute.
Very fine. Howard, I got a whole bunch of questions for you without getting into the nitty-gritty of the technical details. Let's find out what Mel's got to say on the subject, and I'm going to come back to Howard with some further questions of how many dollars, how many people sell it, what does it sound like, and so on. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Okay, from what I know about it, sorry, I could call away for a couple of minutes there. Digital AM broadcast began about, I think it was 2000, I think it was around, 2000. In the United States. The DRM standard, they have a standard. They have several modes of this standard for high fidelity music and other suitable voice and voice only on them. The broadcast actually, they have a selection system, if I remember correctly, that they can select the modes, I think they call it, and the receiver then switches automatically to these modes. I think if I remember correctly now, the modes were to occupy the 4.559, 10 or 20 kilohertz, according to the available spectrum at the time and the quality desired. It was described, in fact, I think QEX. Yeah, I remember reading in QEX that they described the DRM system fairly thorough, but that's about all I remember of it. I'm trying to, you know, recall something else that was it. I remember that the each carrier, the what did they call that? They had a name for that, COFDF. Now, what the heck does that stand for? Coded Orthogonal Frequency Division Multiplex, I think, Dick. And it's, each carrier, I think, was like, I think was a specification of 16 QAM. Or something to that sort, but I'm trying to recall some more details about it. It'll come back to me little by little, Dick, over.
Interesting. What does DRM stand for, if you happen to know, Mel? Go ahead.
The DRM, let me remember now. What did they say it stands for? They had the... I'm trying to... It wasn't... It was, not... DRM, what the heck does it stand for? You know, you got me now. Let me think a minute. Gee, I was just sort of a little slow today. Oh, digital radio. Yeah, now I remember. It comes back to me. I just got to go through the files here in my mental files. Digital radio Mondiale. How would you pronounce it? Mondiale. Take over.
I spell that M word again. Is that somebody's proper name, or is that a mode of modulation? Go ahead.
I don't know. I think it's a mode, basically. It's M-O-N-D-I-A-L-E, Mondiale, I believe. It's it started out as a consortium, actually, of broadcasters, manufacturers, education, government organizations, and a whole business. And it was approved back in about the year 2000 by, it was an ITU system that was approved called the DRM system. But I think its technical name I remember, you know, I'm searching my memory, so a lot of this is coming back to me in pieces. I think they called the ITU-R Romeo, then some numbers after something like that. And they actually, it was a document that defined the digital, the standard to be used worldwide for digital broadcasting. So basically, that's its foundation, over.
Now, maybe I unintentionally ignored this particular article. I've been subscribing to QEX, the Experimenters Exchange, or ARRL, for a good number of years. What's your guess, Mel, as to how long ago was there an article on this subject in QEX? And for a person who is an ARRL member, I think all you've got to do is sign in, tell them your call letters, and you're able to look at all of the past archives of these articles, so we'll be able to look it up for ARRL members. What's your guess as to how long ago that was there, Mel? Go ahead.
It came out 2003. That's how I remember it, because 2003 was when the United States went into this situation. And I think it may have been also something mentioned in QST, but I think, if I'm not mistaken, I'm 99% dead sure, QEX in 2003 had a complete description of the carriers, the spacing, the whole business, how the spectrum, COFDM. I remember they called it Coded Orthogonal Frequency Division Multiplex. That was the technical name for it, over.
Yeah, the C might be coded or it might be coherent, but the rest of it is orthogonal FDM, Frequency Division Multiplex. And to some degree, that's one of the techniques being used with our digital television these days. The questions I've got for you, Howard, is that you've owned one of these receivers now, and maybe Joe has also. I'll be asking him similar questions. I think you said it was $100 or so. I wonder how many stores can I go out and buy one to? I mean, can I walk into Radio Shack and buy one of these? I suspect the answer is yes. How about Best Buy and some of the other places like that, maybe even Sears Roebuck? Can I tell them I own a 99 Toyota Corolla and I'd like it to fit into the front panel? Or does it have to be sitting off to one side? Roughly how many radio stations out there are equipped to transmit this mode? You've heard it. What does it sound like? I understand that people are complaining the range is not quite the same. In other words, as you drive along and you get a multipath reception, I suspect there is some inter-symbol distortion that occurs and you get some dropouts. So what was it like from your point of view, and how many stations, how many dollars, how many models? Can I match my particular radio? Anything you know along these lines, Howard, because you've already done it. Tell us what it was like. KC2OJO in Green Lawn, K2RAW in Huntington.
Actually, I haven't bought one. I have been looking at them and really didn't want to bother, mainly because there are quite a few problems. There are local stations, for instance, in Connecticut, the National Public Radio uses this. So the All News channel currently that you get in this area uses HD radio, but there are two separate systems. And the Mondial, that particular system, you're not going to see that really in the ham radio domain too often, because it's really first really being used in the shortwave region. People are using this. Some of the national shortwave radio stations are right now starting to switch over from the analog to digital. And, of course, it's a problem. It's the usual chicken or the egg. It's kind of tough. You don't have many listeners out there, so it's kind of slow converting over. The radios that are available commercially is HD radio, and it's a different system, and it's completely proprietary as opposed to the digital radio Mondial, which, as I said, is primarily for short waves. The main advantage that I see is when you're in range, it's the same as the digital TV. You get great results if you're going to get anything at all. And, of course, you also get messages in terms of the music being played and things of that nature, because since it's digital, you'll also get captions coming over and other information. And similarly, you can select for multiple channels. But I have not actually sprung for it yet, mainly because I didn't want to bother starting to run up some more antennas just for AM radio. Back to you, Dick.
If you did make the leap, Howard, is this a desktop radio you'd be using in the home, or is it a radio you'd be using in your automobile? To get really good reception, I guess you'd like to have a separate antenna for it. And when it gives you the captioned information, is there a way that you can press a button and it tells you in audio that you're listening to the so-and-so orchestra play the such-and-such song? Or is that flashed across something like a liquid crystal to the screen? How does it give you that extra captioning information? Now back to you, Howard.
Most of the radios that I have seen at Radio Shack are home-type receivers, and they just have a small digital display, and it's pretty much streamed across on the display as far as I know. Although the real market, ultimately, that the people who own the HD radio system are aiming for is really, I believe, the mobile market, because just about everybody is putting their radio on as they drive in the morning. And the other thing that happens is it's not just an AM phenomena. The HD radios also have HD channels on the FM channel. So you can be listening to FM stereo, and at the same time, they are broadcasting digital information on the FM stations too, and still called HD radio, even though obviously one is on the AM band and one is on the FM band. So there, those radios not only have regular AM and regular FM, but they have what they call HD on both bands. Back to the group. KC2OJR.
Thank you very much, Howard and Mel. Looks like we're getting a lot more information here. So I'm getting the impression that most of these radios are AM and FM. They've got some kind of liquid crystal screen or, light-emitting diodes or whatever that represent a marquee that scrolls across giving you the information, the other captioned information, so to speak. It can't be closed captioned for the deaf, though, because people who are hearing impaired tend not to listen to radio. But who knows? Maybe so. Sounds like a great technology coming along. I think these digital techniques are going to catch on, Joe. I think computers, handheld computers, digital assistants, iPod, SG, third generation, whatever. We all want more and more power in our pocket to communicate while we're mobile. We want wireless stuff. That was one of the earlier subjects on a TechNet a couple of weeks ago. Should a new student learn wireless technology? Because the American public can't get enough of it, the answer has got to be yes. So I wonder what your exposure is to HD radio, Joe. Are you thinking of taking the plunge? Do you own one? How many stations have you listened to, and so on? The guy who asked, who kicked us off on this question, was for the A2RYY. Joe, you got it.
I don't own an HD radio in the car. I have a 95 car. Doesn't have one of those radios, and it precedes that by many years. So I was more interested in basically the technology of how it's done, where you're able to transmit a normal AM carrier with voice modulation and have the digital modulation in front of the carrier at the same time, and one does not seem to fall the other. That's really what I was striving at understanding. I understand the basic concept of what you're talking about, is having clearer music, clearer programming, and all good information coming on your play radio. I do understand that. I'm familiar with that. It was great. And I understand they're probably doing the same thing on FM. See, what FM is, if they do it on a subcarrier, you can't hear it, because whatever's there, you'd be totally above you. You wouldn't be able to hear it. But with AM, obviously you can't hear it. The only thing I do notice on some channels, I listen to the car radio, like 710OR, if you go off channel, one channel, like 700 or listen to 720, you can hear a rather high-level rushing noise, a white noise type of effect. When going on AM, you don't hear that between channels, but on those channels you do. I think it's also present on with 1010 winds. You go down to 1000 KC or 1020, you don't see the same kind of effect. So they are putting some sort of modulation information to the next channel, partially, that it is proceeding with the radio. But listening on channels, you don't have any effect as far as it doesn't affect the audio monitoring whatsoever. So that's basically it. I guess maybe this is a KE2AGA question when he rolls around later on to the TechNet, right?
It sure is. We're going to ask him, Joe, as soon as Eric arrives. And like everyone else, I listen to my AM radio or ham radio when I'm in my automobile. In fact, quite often I listen to both. And one of the problems I've got, I'm going to ask you guys to give me a little help on, is how do I stop the leak that I get when a heavy rain comes along and the piece of cable that goes to the mag mount on the roof goes to the rubber seal of the door, and a little bit of water will crawl down that cable and wet my rug. It's happened to me a few times, to the point now when I know it's going to rain, I take off the mag mount. There's got to be a solution to that, a simple solution. I don't want to glue it in position, so to speak. I want the whole thing to be removable. So maybe the rubber seal around my door is just not soft enough to properly accommodate the cable. Or maybe I should put the cable off to one side somewhere. I'll eventually work out the details of this one. But I want the mag mount to be removable. But I usually listen to FM. I'm now going to go listen to AM and listen to 1020 and 1000 to see if I hear the effect that you're talking about. And whether or not they're really transmitting in the adjacent channel is not quite clear, Joe. If the adjacent channel is truly blank, then the automatic gain control of your radio goes wide open to high gain mode, and it becomes more vulnerable to the side lobes of the IF filter, where it will start listening to signals in the adjacent channel if they're strong enough, even though they're meeting the FCC requirement for the amount of rejection. So I'm having a little bit of trouble believing that the FCC gave permission for a station to transmit digital data in the adjacent channel. I think it's an effect of our particular radios that we hear that if the adjacent channel happens to be blank. And in the metro areas, my guess is they did the same thing they do with television. In other words, they use alternate channels and don't assign adjacent channels so that people don't hear the intermodulation distortion. The number of broadcast channels are not quite that dense in the metro area yet, is what I think is going on. So the topic right now we're discussing is HD radio, digital techniques, the DRM standard. Anybody have any further information on this, give me your call letters right now. K2LIW and the TechNet.
KT2OJO. They're really not broadcasting into the adjacent channel. The information they're broadcasting is in the main channel, but it extends out over to the adjacent, almost to the adjacent channels within legal limits. So the FCC says that if you're at a certain channel, you are allowed to have skirts that are so far down, and they may extend into the adjacent channel, but the main power is, of course, your regular station on your regular sensor frequency. So what they've done is broadcast essentially a very flat signal that's the same in their band, and it extends out pretty far on the sideband, which makes sense because it's the same as on digital TV, where if you're going to use OFDM or orthogonal frequency division multiplexing, it's basically a level amplitude all the way out, but at a very low amplitude. And that's the way the HD radio works on AM. So that, and of course, your AGC is normally going to force your reception down because the main carrier is there. So I imagine that these radios have to have something built in to bring up the skirts also. Back to TechNet.
Okay. Thank you for all that information. I know that digital television these days is required at the broadcast center to use super filters so that the adjacent channels are down a ridiculous number of dB. I just got a message that Kent from the A5EJB has some further information, possibly on this subject. So let's stand by long enough to see if Kent is there. To the A5EJB, go right ahead. K2LIW in the TechNet.
H-U-R-I-W in the multitude, WA5-BJB. Yes, the AM broadcast digital is a OFDM signal 35 dB below the main carrier. It has extensive forward error correction and retransmission of the signal. In fact, they have so much that they delay the analog audio 4 seconds. So that the processing time for the digital and the processing for the analog meet. If you're listening on a digital HD AM radio, you'll be listening to the signal, you'll hear a few birdies, some carriers, some noise, the OFDM will lock, suddenly you see the background noise go away completely. Now, if you start to drive under a tunnel and pick up some noise, you would lose it. So instead of having your sound like that, they do fade back to analog. So they go back to the analog signal. Then it when it locks up again, you hear the background noise and so forth go away. And it is wider than the regular signal, and there's some various complaints on that. The FM signals are also stuffed in there as a wide signal between the carrier subbands, and it's a high-speed data stream. Some programs are running multiple additional programs. So on AM, they run the same program on analog and digital. On FM, they run different programs. Over.
Very fine, Glenn. Well, hold on a minute. I was transmitting on the wrong channel. I'm listening to you on 975-375, which is where you're coming through and then being repeated to this repeater, tremendously long delay, like about 4 seconds of carrier dropout of this repeater before you're able to pick up. So the delay through the link is quite long tonight. That voice you are hearing is Kent, Whiskey Alpha 5, Victor Juliet Bravo, who's coming from the Dallas-Fort Worth area of Texas, an old VHF, UHF buddy of mine. And so I am curious, Kent, how many of these DRM or digital radios have you owned? How long have you owned them? How many of your buddies have owned them? How many of the Dallas stations cover them? How many dollars? Is it easy to adapt to your car? Do you have it in the car or just in the house? Tell us a little bit about your experience with digital radio reception, Kent. And you've already given us quite a bit of the technical information. WA5VJB with quite a bit of delay. Don't worry. He'll be there. K2RIW, the tech name.
This is DO108, W2, slash DO108.
Okay. I currently own 3 HD radios. All of them are, well, one's in what I'll call an office. The other two I have in the house. I'd say most of the major 50 kilowatt stations in this area are transmitting the digital signal as well. And again, it's interesting, you'll be listening to it, they'll be fuzzy, you'll have a computer on in the room, you'll hear a heterodyne, and then with the OFDM sync, and that takes a good 5-10 seconds, you suddenly hear the background noise and the birdies go away, and in many cases the program goes from mono to stereo. On the FM, while the big stations are running 30 kilowatts into their antennas, the HDs are running 300 watts. They're running 20 dB less power. There's some arguments that that was a little overly optimistic on the coverage, and they should be running only about 13 or 14 dB less power than the analog. So you can have literally a 1 kilowatt transmitter on the HD with the same coverage as the 30 kilowatt analog. Did a presentation on this because they have a really key trick. You have two transmitters, one analog, one digital, both feeding the same antenna on the same frequency. Key trick. One's going out the antenna right hand, circular, the other's going out the antenna left-hand circular. So I have a 30 kilowatt transmitter and a 300 watt transmitter connected to the same antenna at the same time through some really slick hybrid. And not only do that, but they had a total of 6 of them using the same antenna. I took a bunch of pictures of them and sent them to you some time back ago, Dick. KQRIW, WA5BJB in the TechNet.
Thank you very much for that information, Kent. Yeah, I have to go back and look at the pictures you mailed me. Some of those pictures were the circular polarized, or at least the helical transmitting antennas at the top of that 1,800-foot tower at Cedar Hill. And sometimes you go up that tower with your buddy who runs that particular station. We had another person who signed in with a weak signal. I think it was something like W1ORH. Would that person come back and give us your name, any information you've got on this subject? W1ORH question mark, K2RIW in the TechNet. My name is Dick. Okay, that time I didn't hear him. I listened on both the input and the output. Sounds like this technique is going to catch on. And a cute idea to transmit horizontal, clockwise and counterclockwise out of the same FM antenna. You can't do that on AM. At least I don't think you can. Transmitting horizontal polarization out of an AM station where the antenna is already close to 1,000 foot tall just for the radiating mass would be a good trick. But on top of that, Kent, I think it's possible with the right kind of hybriding device to transmit two separate independent signals on the same... Nope, I take that back. Any method of combining, when they're both on the same frequency, would have to involve a terminating resistor where half the power would be lost. It'd be a resistive summing device. You could put two carriers on the exact same frequency with different information on the same antenna, and they'd be isolated from each other, the two transmitters, if and only if you're willing to suffer 3 dB of loss through the hybrid combiner, through the termination of the power summing device. It really would be a power splitter used backwards. But by clockwise and counterclockwise, you're spatially summing the signals. They're orthogonal to each other. Clockwise and counterclockwise are considered radio-wise orthogonal. That is to say, they don't directly couple. And if there's enough axial ratio performance of those antennas, those two signals could be isolated by numbers like 20 or 30 decibels. What's your guess, Kent, as to how many of the broadcast stations on FM or AM in the Dallas-Fort Worth area are doing this? You own three of these radios. As you tune around, how many channels on AM can you find? How many channels on FM can you find? And you may have told me, but I don't remember whether or not you're also using this in your mobile as well as your home. You did make it clear to us that the way the mobile is set up, that when a fade out of the digital signal occurs, the radio flips over to the AM modulation, and I guess you lose your stereo, you lose your high fidelity, but at least there's no dropout. However, you're going to make a jump of 4 seconds in that particular programming material. So if a girl is singing a particular song and she backsteps 4 seconds or jumps ahead 4 seconds, I guess it's the sentence that she's singing.
Repeater, time out.
I guess it's the sentence that she's singing can sometimes come out kind of funny. How about you got some stories along those lines? For the A5EJB, with a great big delay from us. K2RAW in the TechNet.
Ah, no, Dick, you got the delay backwards. It takes 4 seconds of forward error correction to build the digital signal up. So they delay the analog signal 4 seconds. So the fade back to analog is seamless to the human ear, other than you hear the noise floor coming up. In the event that they actually transmit violence, now I realize that doesn't happen very much on a modern AM station, but if they ever actually give you 2, 3, 4, 5 seconds of silence, you will hear the OFDM buzz in the background. You can hear the digital buzz when they're quiet. So it works out nice. It's a little wider, and there's a lot of complaints for people who like to do AM, DXing, and so forth. The wider signals are a problem. As I said, all of the big stations in the Dallas area are now transmitting the digital AM. So that would be about a half dozen I know are. Most of the low-power guys are not. On the FM broadcast band, I would say about one-third are transmitting it. And some are transmitting multiple programs. I personally like light jazz. The only station transmitting light jazz at the moment is one of the HD stations. Imagine your coax 1,800 feet long going up to the antennas. Up there you have your four-port hybrid for generating circular polarization. One goes vertical, one goes horizontal, and normally that fourth port goes to a termination resistor. This time, they bring where that fourth port all the way back down 1,800 feet and terminate it in a circulator. The 300-watt digital signal is then fed back up the circulator. So it goes up, hits the hybrid again, goes out, and it's now using the 30-kilowatt transmitter as its dummy load for CP. Apparently hasn't ever been a problem. So that's the technique they're using, Dick. Over.
Very crafty. And I can see how that works. When you set up a four-port quadrature hybrid, that's really a 3 dB directional coupler that has a straight through line and a coupled line that's a 3 dB down, so to speak. When you feed it correctly into a pair of probes into a feed horn, a circular feed horn, for instance, where one probe is at 12 o'clock and one probe is at 3 o'clock, by definition, that system, when set up correctly, will transmit clockwise when you use one of the input ports and the other one terminated, and if you reverse that procedure, you transmit counterclockwise. In other words, you're deciding whether the 12 o'clock is delayed with reference to the 3 o'clock or vice versa. By the IEEE standard, if the radio wave that's being emitted by your antenna system starts off polarization-wise at 12 o'clock and then delays 90 degrees at 3 o'clock, that is, by definition, clockwise circular polarization by IEEE standards. And the reason I use all those fancy words is because it's the exact opposite by classic physics analysis. The people who set up lasers and whatever have the exact opposite definition as to what is clockwise and what is counterclockwise. From time to time, it creates a lot of confusion. Some of the moonbound guys will transmit into one of those ports and transmit clockwise, listen out of the other report, and now they're listening counterclockwise, transmitting clockwise, listening counterclockwise, and when you listen to an echo off the moon, like your own echo, that's exactly what you want to do. The fancy characteristic of a clockwise signal is that after one single bounce, it doesn't matter whether or not that's a normal bounce or a grazing bounce, one single bounce, clockwise becomes counterclockwise. And the reason for that, let me drop, is that every clockwise signal, every circular polarized signal, could be decomposed into a horizontal and a vertical, where one is transmitted 90 degrees ahead in time from the other. Head in time, head in phase, call it what you like, but shifted 90 degrees. The horizontal portion, when it hits a, let's say, a grazing piece of horizontal sheet metal, by definition, the horizontal portion reverses 180 degrees in polarity at the instant of the bounce. The vertical polarization hitting the sheet of metal does not reverse in polarity. Therefore, one is reversing, the other is not. Therefore, clockwise becomes counterclockwise. That's part of what's going on. And many radar systems are set up to intentionally use this characteristic. A raindrop reflection, for instance, will reverse clockwise and counterclockwise. An aircraft reflection, most of the time you're getting more than one bounce. You might get a bounce off the wing, then off the fuselage, and then radiated back to you. So the double bounce you get from an aircraft reflection means a significant amount of the pole of the energy coming back to you is co-polarized, whereas the rain between you and that aircraft is counterpolarized. So therefore, you get a significant amount of rain rejection compared to target signal to noise ratio by using a circular polarization in the correct way with a radar system, and that's often used. You may have some further comments on all of the above, Kent, because I think you've done quite a bit of experimenting with circular polarized antennas with and without moonbounds. To B5BJB for some more comments. K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay. Well, photographs of those very high power circulators are in your email inbox, Dick, and you will note that, I mean, you're tuning this thing very carefully when you've got that kind of power floating around. And the temperature at which the circulators were when they were tweaked are marked on the circulators. And you can see where they have individual adjustments for all three ports. So there's some high-power circulators, and they're fairly good size. Well, they have to be fairly good size just from the low frequency they're at compared to most. Yes, when you start bouncing circular polarized signals off the moon at low frequency, they come back pretty much reflected. But as you get higher and higher and higher in frequency, the little itty-bitty waves bouncing off the little itty-bitty rocks come back very, very confused in the polarization. There's a lot of tricks that are done with aircraft identification where you transmit different polarizations and look at the difference in the reflections coming back and do an analysis of the targets you're looking at. Oh, yeah, I kind of like the HD radio. As I said, they're putting a lot more programs in there, running some more music. The quality of the music is very, very good. It's running a lot less power. KQRIW in the group, WA5BJB.
Very fine, Kent. I'm now looking at the photographs, the two photographs he just mailed me. And this is from the broadcast center, which he frequently visits. It looks to me like the main transmission line going up the tower is Andrew 3-inch Airline, is my guess. Yeah, it looks like Andrew 3-inch Airline. The circulator itself, it's got a sign alongside it saying keep metallic objects away so it doesn't become degaussed. On the duct tape that's on it, it says 82 degrees. I presume that means that it normally runs at 82 degrees Fahrenheit in the air-conditioned environment of this broadcast center. And so that's where the circulator has been thermally balanced to give the best isolation, probably 20 or 30 dB of isolation. I see a 100, I see some .001. If that was what I think it is, if that was power, that's 30 dB. If that was voltage, it's 60 dB. Let's assume it's got 30 dB of isolation in that particular circulator. That's what I think that sigma 001 is trying to tell me. And I see a painted mark on the screws that hold that circulator together. And it looks like there's a piece of 7/8 inch hard line coming off one of the ports of the circulator. So, I don't know if I've ever seen these particular pictures before, Kent. I've seen many of the pictures of these huge filters that are used for the 8 VSB television broadcasting proper filtering. But when it comes to the digital radio, what do I call it now, DRM or HD radio, I don't know if I've ever seen these pictures before, but maybe I'm kind of forgetful. I wonder if I came close to guessing the right diameter of the airline. I'm guessing it's 3-inch airline. W5EJB, Texas area, K2LAW in the deck net.
The fund, I never thought of the Sigma .001. Dick, that's 100.3 upside down. So that's the frequency of the circulator. The 3-inch hard line you're seeing is going over to the dummy load. Or actually, no, that one's going to the transmitter. Another one. The lines going up and back down the tower are all 6-inch hard lines. I can send you pictures of those in a moment if you'd like. So that's 100.3 is the FM station. Over.
Shows you how ambiguous readings on something can really confuse you. Okay. If you, as an electronic engineer, listening to the sound of my voice, study wireless techniques, study how antennas work, study how to make circular and clockwise and counterclockwise polarization, study how quadrature hybrids work, and Wilkinson hybrids, in my opinion, these are all very valuable pieces of information because properly used, they can perform quite a bit of radio magic. Of summing signals, keeping signals separate, doing things that seemingly would appear to be impossible. I, for instance, could, with directional couplers, have one single piece of coaxial cable that runs from left to right in front of me on the desk. I open up a connector, a male and female connector in the middle of that cable, and plug in the right hybrid assembly. Then, by plugging signals into those hybrid assemblies, I could selectively decide to send signal A to the left on the cable, signal B to the right on the cable. Even though they're on the exact same frequency, I could have two separate modulated pieces of programming material on signal A and signal B, and the cable and the hybrid will keep them thoroughly separate. The magic of a transmission line properly used, and this is a slightly controversial area, the magic of a transmission line, very similar to what happens in free space, is that by way of a phenomenon called the Poynting vector, that really means E crossed H, E means E field, and H means magnetic field, and the way Mother Nature will cross one into the other, and if it's going from 12 o'clock towards 3 o'clock, you call it a clockwise advance. The advance of the screw would then be at right angles to the two, and it would be moving away from you. So you can have a signal in free space on the exact same frequency, one of them moving away from you, one of them moving toward you, and the signals do not mix in any way. Mother Nature keeps them thoroughly separate, and only when they reach your particular antenna would they possibly be mixed, depending on what you're using for an antenna. The same thing happens inside of waveguides. The same thing happens inside of coaxial cable. You can keep signals flowing from top to bottom and bottom to top, thoroughly separate from each other.
Repeater, time out.
Thoroughly separate from each other, if you so desire. And once you learn a couple of basic facts about how these things work, that won't be so mysterious to you. But learning those things can be extremely valuable if you happen to be working in the wireless technology area. I know we went reasonably far left of center of your original question, but your question was a darn provocative, Joe. I'm going to pass it back to you, and maybe you can get us back on track as to what you really had in mind. WHURYY, KQLAW in the TechNet. Okay, maybe Joe got called away. And maybe we're so far left the field, he left us. The next person who signed in with a question was, question or comment, was Glenn, KC2QIQ. Hope we haven't put you to sleep, Glenn. KC2QIQ, K2RIW in the TechNet.
No, luckily enough, Dick, I'm still here, but boy, it's interesting what you were just, the last part of what you were talking about, phasing of antennas and everything else is kind of along the lines of the questions that I have here for you tonight. You know, as you know, I've been working on like a little Doppler system antenna and a Doppler system for my Jeep, and what was happening was I was working between quarter wave antennas and half wave antennas and noticing some difference in the phasing. I think we talked about this before, but in doing this, I figured what I wanted to do was see if I could, you know, learn some differences about the quarter wave, the half wave, and loop antennas. And I wanted to bring them with me to one of the EMI chambers and drive them with a generator, a signal generator, and I tuned them for a small enough sized antenna so I can kind of get the feel for the difference between a quarter wave ground plane, a half wave dipole, and a loop antenna and how they perform in an X, Y, and Z axis, looking at them with just a signal generator feeding them at 449 megahertz. And some very, very interesting results. Let me let it drop, Dick. And what I found, what I was finding was that I was, well, what I was expecting was that if I did a quarter wave ground plane at, you know, like 6 1/4 inches and a half wave dipole at about 12 1/2 inches and a full loop at somewhere around a 26.8 inch loop, you know, at 449 megahertz, looking at them, you know, and feeding them with a constant output from the generator, I should see, you know, a little difference between the antennas in 10 meters, but not a large difference. And unfortunately, what happened was I wound up building 5 antennas, not just the quarter wave, the half wave dipole, the full wave loop. Then I went back to a 0.7 wavelength dipole and a 0.7 wavelength loop, and I retuned them with balance to get me back to 50 ohms and tried them inside the chamber. And there again, I got really different results. You know, greater than 20 dB difference in 3 axes, which is, you know, that's a 20 dB microvolts. And do you have any idea what might be going on here or why there's such a radical difference in 10 meters? I have the suspicion that the results inside a chamber like that are just bogus. I was just wondering if maybe you have some thoughts on the idea that that's probably not a good way to test an antenna. KC2QIQ.
There were two or three subjects mixed together in there, Glenn. I'm going to try to separate them. First of all, very, very few anechoic chambers, a chamber with absorbing material intended for antenna testing. It's called an anechoic chamber. That means no echoes. Let me try. Very few of those anechoic chambers in the United States have any significant performance below 1,000 megacycles. So you said 10 meters, which means 30 megacycles, and every chamber that you and I are likely to touch at 30 megacycles is going to be pretty yucky, and that's going to disturb things like crazy. And even when you build a miniature version of the antenna at 450 megacycles, still it's below 1,000, and as I said, very few chambers have good performance above below 1,000 megacycles. Above that, they start performing pretty well. We're almost all forced to use outdoor antenna range, or OATS ranges, as they're called, outdoor test system, I think it means, when we're below 1,000 megs. That's one factor. Another factor is quarter wave, half wave, and loop. My goodness, you'd be amazed what's going on there. Let me drop. A quarter wave ground plane with a really big ground plane gives an extremely predictable performance where the gain pattern, whatever, will be extremely close to that pattern that you will see for a half-wave vertically polarized dipole, except for the fact that if the ground plane is big enough, you're only covering one hemisphere as opposed to the whole sphere. If the ground plane is big enough, you're only covering half the sphere, and therefore the signal would appear to be 3 dB louder, even though the pattern is almost the same. Conservation of energy going on there. When you go to a half-wave ground plane antenna, because the current flowing into the ground plane is drastically decreased, you can get away with a significantly smaller ground plane. That's the good news. The bad news is now you're feeding not a 35 ohm impedance like you would have with a quarter wave at the bottom. You're feeding roughly 1,000 ohm impedance. You're feeding one edge of a half-wave dipole. Therefore, you need some kind of an impedance step-up device. And so trying to feed equal power into a quarter wave ground plane or a half-wave ground plane, because there's such a significant difference in the requirement for the size of the ground plane, such a significant difference in the way you impedance match it, but the comparison between the two in anything but an extremely good chamber becomes an experiment and frustration of a whole lot of things that are fighting you. That's one factor. Now when you go to a circular loop antenna, let's assume that my loop antenna is being constructed parallel to the Earth. And if I make the loop very small compared to a wavelength, like I make the loop 15 or 20% of a wavelength in total circumference, by making the loop small, by definition, the current along the circumference of the loop is nearly constant. That's the good news. The impedance match is very difficult. It is an inductive shunt like you wouldn't believe. It takes a whopping big capacitor at the open gap where you're feeding it in order to impedance match it, just to resonate it, and then impedance matching it is another big trick. So a small loop with nearly constant current flowing through it is frequently used as a broadcast antenna. That loop that I described, if it's small in diameter and placed parallel to the Earth, would
repeater timeout.
That small loop would be an omnidirectional, horizontally polarized antenna. If you could see the antenna pattern, it is a donut on the horizon in power. In other words, it almost looks like the pattern of a vertically polarized dipole, except that it's horizontally polarized. That's what the pattern would look like. There's a catch. As you make the loop larger and larger in diameter, if I make the loop a full wavelength of diameter, I no longer need a gap at one end. I can close the gap. It now becomes two horizontal dipoles side by side, and they happen to be curved. And if I pick up the plane of this loop so that it's now perpendicular to the Earth, you and I would call that a cubical quad. A cubical quad, fed at the bottom, is horizontally polarized. Fed at the left side or the right side is vertically polarized. And it really, when you feed it at the bottom and it's horizontally polarized, and whether it's round, diamond-shaped, square, triangular-shaped, those are your choices. They all behave very similarly. It's two vertically stacked, horizontally polarized dipoles. And that has a pattern that radiates primarily broadside. So when you take a loop antenna from being small in circumference compared to a wavelength, and impedance-matched and resonated, it flips from being an antenna that is radiating primarily in the plane of the antenna to when you make the loop larger and larger in diameter, it becomes an antenna that primarily radiates normal to the plane of the antenna. A loop antenna is a very simple looking device. It's got some very subtle characteristics where it slides from one mode to another mode as you change the circumference and continue to resonate it. These are some of the factors you ran into. I guarantee there's a few more. So I guarantee you measure some results.
At 8 o'clock, W2VL, repeater system.
Guarantee you measured some results that are very difficult to interpret. Some of the words I gave you may help a little bit. KC2QIQ, I wonder how many of these effects you saw. K2RIW in the TechNet.
I love this.
There's a loop man from way back. He's a little bit loopy, as they say. You got it, Clint.
Well, I can tell you that these measurements were definitely driving me loopy, that's for sure. And, yeah, just a little bit more about the antennas themselves. One was a quarter.